Today I'm going to tell you about my most embarrassing musical moment. Yes, today I'm going to tell you about all the gruesome details of my very first open mic, in hopes that you'll learn some lessons from my mistakes. Hey TAC family, welcome to episode 179 of the Acoustic Tuesday Show. This show is designed to bring fun, focus, and progress to your guitar journey through my weekly Guitar Geek lists, plus success stories from your fellow TAC members. Speaking of, can you imagine not having the guitar in your life? At all? Well, the TAC member that you're going to meet today, his name is Fletch, and back in 2018, music wasn't even on his radar. Fast forward to today, he's playing open mics and recording his own material. It's a pretty awesome story. You're going to meet Fletch here in just a moment, plus you're going to get your dose of weekly acoustic guitar news you can use, including two guitars that literally knock my socks off. One guitar knocked this sock off, the other guitar knocked this sock off. Plus, Gibson is up to something in Bozeman, and I'm going to tell you all about it here in just a bit. But first, let's talk about open mics. I'm going to tell you about my open mic experience, my first open mic experience, and I'm going to share with you six lessons that you need to know before your first open mic. Each of the open mic lessons that I'm going to teach you today come from the missteps and mistakes that occurred during my first open mic. Yes, my first open mic performance was full of cringeworthy moments, all of which I could have easily avoided if somebody would have told me what I'm going to tell you today. So not only am I going to teach you these lessons, I'm going to share with you some tidbits from my first open mic because I think it paints a pretty amazing picture. Plus, it's fun to think back to that time. The first open mic that I played was at a bar called The Store in Chicago. It's on Halsted Street. I believe it's on North Halsted Street. Nonetheless, it's a bar in Chicago, kind of your typical open mic performance zone. You've got the bar, you've got the mic and sound system, it's all there. Well, I went there with the prompting of a classmate of mine. This was during my college years. I think I was about 19 or 20 at this point. And my friend at the time, Brandon, said, "Hey, you should go to this open mic. It's at The Store. It's totally awesome. I'll meet you there." Cool. This sounds great. I show up at The Store, the bar that this open mic was held at, and I waited for Brandon, and I waited for Brandon. Lo and behold, he never showed up. So what did I do? I sat down at a table, and I started drinking some beers, waiting for my name to be called to perform. Well, turns out I waited quite a long time, and in that time, I drank quite a few beers. So lesson number one is drink the right stuff. By the time I was ready to perform, I was very much inebriated, to the point to where I probably shouldn't have been performing. Now, a lot of nerves get worked up when you're getting ready to perform an open mic, and you'd think, okay, I can have a couple of beers. And that might work if you only have a couple. But generally speaking, the more nervous, the more anxious you get, the quicker you drink those beers or other alcoholic beverages, and, well, it just doesn't play out very well. So lesson number one, drink the right stuff. And this goes for coffee as well. A little bit later in my young, budding live performance career, I had quite a few bits of coffee before I went on stage, only to find out that my hands were shaking so much from the nerves and the caffeine that I couldn't fret accurately. So yes, indeed, that's another situation that points to drinking the right stuff. It seems silly to mention, it seems obvious, but when you put your name on that list and you start having those nerves build and that anxiety build, it's funny what the brain can do. So drink the right stuff. Which brings me to lesson number two. Lesson number two is get your gear in order. Know that what you're planning to perform on, the guitar you're planning to use, the tuner you're planning to use, actually works before you get there. Let's flash back to that open mic I went to, the very first one. I brought a 70s Ovation Balladeer, one that my uncle found at a garage sale and bought. Cool. It was kind of a cool, almost Glen Campbell-like guitar. And it sounded fine acoustic, and I enjoyed playing it. It was pretty comfortable to play, and I thought, well, I'll just throw this in my gig bag, head down to the open mic, and plug in, and away I go, right? It's got a pickup. Well, I get there. My name gets called. I get the guitar out of the gig bag. I plug it in, and all I hear is static. I turn the volume up, the static gets louder. I turn the volume down, the static decreases in volume. I wiggle the plug, and it creates all this popping noise. Do you think I checked to see if that pickup would work prior to the open mic? didn't really think about it at that point in time. I sure wish I did. So yes, make sure that your gear is in order. If you plan on using a tuner, make sure to bring it. Make sure it has fresh batteries. If you plan on using a specific kind of pick, make sure you have some extras. Heck, make sure you even have some extra guitar strings. Because it always feels good to be prepared and know that the gear that you're bringing actually works. Take it from me. It was quite an embarrassing moment to show up on stage, inebriated, and not have my guitar work. I sure wish I had video footage of this. I don't. And somewhere in my storage bins, I do have some recordings from these early open mics. And I promise you, if I do find them at some point in time, I'm gonna include them on the Acoustic Tuesday show. Okay, let's move on to lesson number 3. And this one seems pretty obvious, but again, this is something that I didn't put too much weight in when I first performed, and I wish I would have. Lesson number 3, know what you plan on performing and rehearse it. You'd think, okay, Tone, that's really obvious. Again, as you're preparing, as you're kind of sitting at home, getting ready for this open mic, you think, yeah, I got this. I got 2 to 3 songs that I think I can play. I'll pick one of them. And when you get there and when you're on stage, that's the wrong time to pick what you're gonna play. You should know going into the open mic exactly what you're gonna play. And you should have rehearsed it so that, well, you know how to get through the song. I wrote at that point in time, and still do for a matter of fact, I wrote instrumental acoustic guitar pieces in alternate tunings, and I was just starting to dip my toe in this. And I had this one piece that was written in, check this tuning out, E, 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 B, E. That was the tuning. I actually think I got it from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. I didn't get it from them. I just saw that one of their songs, I believe Sweet Judy Blue Eyes was in that tuning. Anyways, I was messing around with this tuning, and at home I thought, yeah, this is an easy tuning to mess around with. I'll just kind of freeform and vamp on this loose idea. Well, I show up on stage. I was inebriated. My guitar didn't work, so I had to borrow somebody else's guitar. I tuned it to that tuning with somebody else's tuner because I didn't have a tuner either. And I thought, yeah, I'll just kind of mess around live at an open mic. It didn't end so well. In fact, it didn't end at all. I just kind of felt like I should keep going. And I did keep going for like 7 minutes. When I got that first recording back, because they gave us a recording on CD at the time, I looked at it after I put it in my computer and I thought, was I really up there for 7 minutes? People listened to this for 7 minutes? Holy smokes. Now, don't get me wrong, I was proud of myself for getting up there, but I sure wish I would have been a little bit more well-rehearsed and a little bit better prepared in terms of what I was going to play. So yes, know what you plan on playing. Which brings me to lesson number 4, and that is prepare for curveballs. Let me paint this picture for you. So I'm at this bar in Chicago, The Store, on North Halsted Street. I'm inebriated, I'm on stage, my guitar doesn't work. I have borrowed somebody else's guitar. I have borrowed somebody else's tuner. I am playing a song that I'm not really sure if I even wrote it yet. And there was a baseball game on the TV. What happens when somebody scores a home run in baseball?
There's a drive, way back, it might be, Cubs win!
The entire bar erupts in cheers. If that happens while you're playing, it's one of the most startling things in the world, especially because you're in your own zone. You're looking at the guitar, you're trying to figure out this song as you're going, or at least in my case, that's what was happening. And all of a sudden, everybody in the bar erupts in cheers and applause. That is very startling, and you need to prepare for those things. So how do you best prepare for those things? Well, you rehearse that song that you plan on playing in a variety of situations. If you have a family, rehearse it in the kitchen while dinner's being made. The kids are running around, your spouse might be cooking dinner or might be on the phone. Play the song while things are happening around you, because it builds up this shield in a way to where a kid could be throwing a Nerf ball in the house and it hits you in the head, but it doesn't affect you at all while you're playing. Or play in front of the TV, or play at a park. Play where things are going on that you can't always necessarily predict. Of course, make sure your guitar is safe, but put yourself in situations where, well, maybe it's less than ideal to play a song, because that will help you build your stage armor, if you will. So yes, prepare for curveballs. Let's move on to lesson number 5. And lesson number 5 is one I wished I would have learned prior to this open mic, and that is team up with a friend. Well, I guess I tried to team up with a friend, but he never showed up. So I guess I tried to do this, but it didn't really go the way that I wanted it to. So yes, team up with a friend. If an open mic is on your bucket list, it's something you really want to do, but you know what? You're just downright scared to do it. That's okay. It kind of feels a little bit scary. So ask a Guitar Geek buddy to say, hey, would you mind coming up on stage with me and just strumming along with me while I sing this song? We'll strum together. We'll strum the same exact parts. It doesn't have to be complicated. But having a Guitar Geek buddy there to play alongside you is invaluable, because all of a sudden it's not you against the world, it's you and your Guitar Geek buddy, and you can almost share this really cool moment between yourself and your Guitar Geek buddy and almost feel the safety of, well, having some numbers behind you, you know, that whole safety in numbers thing. So yes, please team up with somebody. Again, if the guitar is on your bucket list and it's something you've always wanted to do, do it and ask a buddy to come with you, because it really can open up a whole gateway into a whole new level of guitar playing for you and your Guitar Geek buddy. Which brings me to the final lesson, and this is something that I wish I would have put more stock in had I known prior to that first open mic. Lesson number 6 is have fun. The whole point of you playing an open mic, the whole point of putting yourself out on a limb, is to truly enjoy the guitar and feel fulfilled by playing for other people. That's hard to say. But be fulfilled by playing for other people in a live scenario. There's no bigger rush than doing that. And part of that is kind of those nerves that happen. But as nervous as you are, as anxious as you are, make sure to take a second, take a deep breath, and have fun. Remember that the whole point of this is to have fun. The whole point of this is to share your love of guitar with somebody else, with a crowd, with somebody, the one person that might be listening to you. Maybe your family showed up at the open mic to hear you play. Make sure to have fun and take in the moment. I look back at my first open mic and I think about being too intoxicated to play. I think about having a broken guitar, having to borrow somebody else's guitar, having to borrow another tuner, playing a song that wasn't finished, thinking I was going to meet a friend there, but him bailing. And I think back and I thought, you know, that was actually still pretty darn fun. I wish I would have taken more of that scene in while I was there, but I was so wrapped up in all these other things going on. And you know what's crazy? At the end of the evening, I still had fun. It sounds like a miserable experience. And believe me, it was full of those cringeworthy moments where if I was outside myself watching myself perform, I would have thought, ooh, this isn't going well. But I look back and I think, you know, that was a start to something amazing, because I kept going back to that open mic. And you know why? Because the people in the crowd, the other guitarists and the other singer-songwriters that were there, were so incredibly supportive. As bad of a night as I had, they had my back. They lent me a guitar. They lent me a tuner. They let me kind of figure out my song on the fly. So all in all, make sure to have fun. These are things that I wish I knew going into my first open mic, but I want to hear from you. What's a lesson that I forgot to put on my list? Or here's another question. What was your first open mic experience? Did it go incredibly well? Did you have some moments that you wanted to redo? Whatever the case may be, let me know in the comments below. Again, if I missed a lesson, let me know. And also, please share with me your first open mic experience. I can't wait to hear from you. I really, really look forward to it. And I hope you found my first open mic experience, well, hopefully it made you laugh a little bit, and hopefully it helped teach you something. Now I want to shift our gaze to a member of the TAC family. This individual, prior to 2018, had no musical experience. He didn't own a guitar, and I don't even think recording his own songs was on his radar. Fast forward to 2021, he's recording a ton of original songs, he's met a ton of guitar geeks, he has a plethora of guitars, and he's having a blast. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I'd love for you to meet Fletch. Fletch is a pillar of the TAC community, and his story is pretty darn amazing. He's just celebrating his third year at Tony's Acoustic Challenge. Yes, his third TAC-iversary, and here's what he has to say about it. It's hard for me to imagine now, but back at the beginning of 2018, my life was bereft of music. No guitars, no singing, no previous musical experience whatsoever. Then in March of that year, I stumbled upon some dodgy YouTube advert with a curious bearded chap doing over-enthusiastic very well. Yep, that's the opening paragraph from my TAC-iversary post last year, but it's still relevant today. because tomorrow, March 2021, will be 3 years here at Tony's Acoustic Challenge and 3 years with making music in my life. And it still doesn't feel real to me. It feels very surreal. Three things that I can do now that I couldn't do last year. Number one, keep time. Well, mostly. I think that's one of the biggest skills I've had to learn for collaborating with others. Some people, mentioning no names, insist you try to play in time. Apparently, 4F4, quote-unquote Fletchy time, isn't officially recognized yet. Number two, I can do a virtual open mic. I still get nervous as hell playing at the bigger virtual open mics. No, it's not getting any easier, but I try and force myself to do it. Number three, I can express myself in my music better. I read somewhere, can't remember where or who said it, quote, you don't find a style, it finds you. And I guess that's what's kind of happening with my music right now. I'm discovering what music I like to produce and what I find I'm proud of, listening back to, thinking to myself, I did that, little old me. I even sometimes like the sound of my own voice. Now, this is where Fletch is casting some goals and a vision for the upcoming year. And he says this, by this time next year, I hope that I can, one, be more relaxed and confident playing in front of my peers and or in a live environment. Number two, learn to strum just a little bit better. I have more of an affinity with finger picking and have always struggled with strumming, so I tend to avoid it. I really must go back and revisit those lessons and get a bit more fluid. And number three, I hope to finish the FretWiz course. I just want to thank Fletch for sharing this, and I have to say, Fletch is quite the prolific songwriter. He's recorded a ton of originals and collaborated with a ton of different Tony's Acoustic Challenge members. In fact, just so you get a little sample, I want to share one of his pieces right now, right here, right now. And he's actually playing this with another Tony's Acoustic Challenge member, Steve P, whom I know pretty well, because Anyways, this is the song Siren, written by Fletch and recorded with Steve P. Here it is.
Silhouette on the rocks you try to reach. Draws she closer as your world is breached. Mocking as she drives the wind. Drowning waves engulf your sins.
First, I have to say this. So cool to hear one of Fletch's original songs. And just to think that in 2018, that wasn't even an outlet for him. And now here we are in March of 2021. He's writing and recording his own material. He's collaborating with other guitar geeks. And music is a fulfilling part of his life. And I think it's so cool. Yeah, of course, huge congratulations for celebrating 3 years at Tony's Acoustic Challenge. But even more, 3 years of feeling fulfilled and feeling this growth around music. It's pretty amazing what music can do. It's pretty amazing what guitar playing can do. And I think Fletch is a shining example of that. So again, thank you so much, Fletch, and congratulations on your third year at Tony's Acoustic Challenge. Now I'd like for you to hop in the Acoustic Tuesday private jet. There's plenty of room. Go ahead and grab some snacks. We're gonna fly down to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and visit Mike Whitney and take a look at his guitar arsenal. Here's what Mike has in his guitar arsenal. Clockwise from the left, a 1985 Alvarez 12-string, model number 5221, a Trinity College Bazooki with fleur-de-lis headstock inlay, a K model L5641, which his father-in-law traded a shrimp boat steering wheel for it in the early 1960s, a 1996 original Duolian by Dobro. He's holding a 2018 Martin 0017 SE, a 2008 Martin model SWDGT, that's a mouthful of letters there, that's the Smartwood series. Next, a Yamaha C60 that he bought off a fellow GI in Thailand during the war in 1974. Next, a 2005 custom-built Adams square neck resonator guitar, a 1975 Alvarez model 5038, a hammer dulcimer hand-built by me in 1996. I have to say, I love Mike's guitar arsenal for a lot of reasons. Number one, his little guitar den, his little sign, he's got the Mike's Guitar Lounge, and it just looks like an awesome, inspirational little zone. So cool to see that. Love seeing the square neck resonator in there, Mike. And I also want to say, I believe I see some harmonicas in front of the hammer dulcimer that you built. How cool is that? So again, thank you so much, Mike, for submitting your guitar arsenal. And if you're sitting at home thinking, you know what? I think Mike's guitar arsenal is really cool, and I have a guitar arsenal that I wish to share on the Acoustic Tuesday show. Well, I'm asking you to please do so. And all you have to do is follow three simple steps. Step number one, go to acoustictuesday.store and pick out your favorite guitar arsenal shirt. Step number two, put that shirt on and take a picture amongst all of your guitars. And step number three, please upload that picture at acousticlife.tv. Once you're there, click on the submit link in the top menu, and you can go ahead and upload your picture and tell your story just like Mike did. Remember back when they had Blockbuster Video? And before you returned the video cassette, you had to rewind it, otherwise you'd have a rewind fee. Well, right now, we're going to take some time and rewind time. We're going to rewind time back to episode 176 of the Acoustic Tuesday show, where we talked about the science of habit and how we can apply that to our guitar journeys. There are some wonderful comments on that particular show, and I've selected a few just to share with you today. And let's go ahead and dig in. The first comment comes from Mike T, and he says this: love this. Funny that you talk about BJ Fogg. I was fortunate enough to have a private workshop with him back when I was working at Microsoft. I love that you've taken the time to read and study the psychological side of habits, positive thinking, practicing, etc. Very cool stuff and very useful in the guitar or really any skill journey. Thank you so much for the comment, Mike. And I meant comment. Either way, Mike, I think your comment is on a comet. I think it's pretty awesome. So cool that you had a chance to have a private workshop with BJ. What a wealth of knowledge. And I also have to comment on the psychological side of habits. I have to tell you, as much as I'm a guitar geek, I'm kind of a habit and psychology geek as well. I find it fascinating. And I think it's so cool to leverage that stuff to have a huge benefit and impact on your guitar journey. And the more I learn, the more I want to share with other guitar geeks. So, Mike, I'm glad you found that helpful. And again, thank you so much for commenting. Our next comment comes from Wayne Patton, and he says this: Tony, do you have an endless wardrobe of jerseys? I love it. And go Flyers. I don't necessarily have an endless wardrobe of jerseys. Funny you should ask. I do have quite a few jerseys, but I'm always looking to expand. So every time the Blackhawks or the NHL comes out with another special edition jersey, I salivate a little bit and end up breaking down, usually later in the evening. I'm up with Emerson and I'm surfing on the NHL shop, and all of a sudden a jersey shows up a week later. But way back when, I'm talking when I was in high school, I had a ton of jerseys. I pretty much collected hockey jerseys. These were the older CCM jerseys, and I had a ton of them. I sold them at a garage sale, like maybe 5 years ago, and I'm kicking myself now because I had some really cool ones. But nonetheless, thank you, Wayne, for that comment. Our next comment comes from White Hawk Vision Films, and this is in reference to, I believe it was Jess Jones asking about what neck profile I preferred, to which I answered modified V because it's actually easier on my hand. Well, White Hawk Vision Film says this: thicker modified V-neck is so much better for hand paint. The thicker neck allows your hand to rest on something and your hand not to have to hold itself floating in positions which cause stress and cramping, and the modified V-shape allows you to have the reach of a thin neck. Best of both worlds. I couldn't agree more. I'm glad that you have that observation as well, because I remember thinking, reading the spec sheet and thinking, V-neck, I wonder how my hand's gonna react to that. Turns out I absolutely love it. The modified V-neck, in my opinion, is just like a grand slam of neck profiles. Our next comment comes from a very interesting screen name, and I'm gonna be careful and enunciate this screen name. This is from Sofa Kings Awesome Show. And his comment reads as this, his or hers, I don't know what the gender is here. The comment goes as follows: same here, I'm 40 and have owned a guitar since I was 15. Always just beat around and never really progressed. Over the past 2 years since my son was born, I've made leaps and bounds. Still not great. My drive now is because I want my son to love music like I do and learn together. I think perspective has a lot to do with drive. That being said, finding time to play while having a toddler is like pissing up a rope and trying to stay dry. I really actually resonate with this comment so much, and it's exactly why I picked it. Because when I first started getting into guitar, that's when my dad actually kind of reignited his love of playing guitar. He's the one that showed me the very first couple chords that I learned and a little chunk to a Beatles tune, the end of I've Just Seen a Face. single notes, nothing fancy. But it was cool to look back on that, read this comment, and then look back on my own personal journey and think, wow, that's kind of a cool commonality, because my dad kind of helped further my interest in guitar, but he was also kind of rediscovering the guitar. And then further reading this comment, having a toddler and trying to find time to play is really difficult, and I couldn't agree more. In fact, my guitar routine is now, once I lay Emerson down for his bedtime, I immediately go downstairs. As soon as I know and confirm that he is asleep, I turn my guitar monitor on and I go downstairs to my guitar den to start my practicing. Seems to work so far, so maybe that will help anybody else that has a toddler out get their guitar practice in. Moving on to the final segment of the Acoustic Tuesday show. Yes, indeed, it is time for acoustic guitar news you can use. It is my responsibility, it is my obligation as a guitar geek to keep you on the forefront of the happenings in the acoustic guitar industry, and I've got some juicy chunks of news for you today. Part of me wants to call this part of the show coffee talk, because by this part of the show, I'm generally extremely caffeinated, and I feel like it's better to associate it with coffee talk. I don't know. Let me know in the comments if you think that's a thing. Isn't that an old SNL skit, Coffee Talk? Anyways, let's get on to the news. I've got some really cool stuff going on. The first one brings us to Bozeman, Montana, where I'm located right now. For those of you that don't know, Gibson acoustic guitars are built in Bozeman, Montana. Plain and simple. Any Gibson acoustic guitar, any American-made Gibson acoustic guitar is born right here in Bozeman, Montana. If you didn't know that, it's pretty cool. It's pretty neat. And Gibson has had a factory here since the 1980s. They started when they purchased Flatiron instruments. They moved here in the 80s, and they've maintained the same factory spot for, well, since I believe 1980 or maybe even 1979. I'm not entirely sure the exact date, but needless to say, they are, well, outgrowing their current facility. They're in need of a bigger facility. And you know what's cool? They just broke ground on an expansion to their factory here in Bozeman. In fact, J.C. Curley, the CEO of Gibson Guitars, was just here to have this kind of really cool groundbreaking ceremony. And my friends over at the Acoustic Letter actually went there and filmed his opening statements. So let's have a listen.
It's a monumental time for Gibson, but also for guitars. And, you know, imagine 127 years ago when Orville Gibson started, if you could imagine that we'd be here just building on that dream today. And, you know, to round out the history lesson, we've been here for over 30 years in Bozeman. I think our commitment, you can see, is real, but we're not just thinking about the next 3 or 6 months, we're thinking about the next 30 years.
This next piece of news takes us to Oregon. Yes, Sisters, Oregon to be specific, because Thompson Guitars just built another instrument for Billy Strings. And holy smokes, is this one right up my alley. Not only is it an amazing sounding dreadnought, not only does it have one of the most beautiful pieces of Brazilian rosewood I have ever seen. Oftentimes people have said, yeah, Brazilian rosewood can take on kind of a greenish hue, a greenish color. I didn't ever really see a piece of Brazilian rosewood that was green until I saw this guitar that Thompson Guitars just built for Billy Strings. So yes, it's an amazing sounding dreadnought. It's got Brazilian rosewood, but here's where things get really interesting. The sunburst is called the Smoky Sunburst, and it's kind of spooky, which matches what I think is the crowning jewel of this guitar, the Bride of Frankenstein inlay on the headstock. For somebody that loves horror movies, this is an amazing guitar. And I just have to say, purely from the aesthetic standpoint, mind-blowing. I just love it because it marries the two things that I have a deep, deep, profound love for: horror movies and acoustic music. And this guitar is it's a complete home run. It's stunning looking. It's built to the exact precision that Thompson guitars are all built to. And you might be thinking to yourself, Tom, of course, it looks cool. I get it. It looks cool. But how does it actually sound? I mean, can it sound that good? Again, again, we're going to have to hop in the Acoustic Tuesday private jet and fly from Oregon back over to Michigan. Yes, this next piece of news comes from Michigan, and it comes from Mule Resophonic Guitars. I am infatuated with Mule Resophonic Guitars. I think Matt and his team are building some amazing resonators. I think that their ability to go from idea to product is unbelievable. And I've gushed about the Mavis, I've gushed about my Mule Tricone, and I oftentimes visit the Mule Resophonic Guitars site. And I click around and I look to see what's happening. So I'm clicking around and I'm thinking to myself, I've never seen this before. Builder's Choice Instruments? And I click on it and I can't find anything else. Now I do have some insider information that I don't think I'm at liberty to share, but I just want to say this. Keep your eyes peeled on the Mule Resophonic website, because I think these Builder's Choice Instruments, I think they're going to be pretty darn amazing, if I do say so myself. Now, what I'm showing you, of course, is just some footage of the website and me clicking around and seeing the Builder's Choice Instruments, but I got some intel. So just make sure that your shoes are on tight, holding your socks down, because I think once you see the instruments that are made in the Builder's Choice category, I think your socks are gonna blow clear off your feet, out the window, across the street, probably through the car that's parked in your driveway, and probably into the field next door. Anyways, speaking of getting your socks blown off, I've got two guitars that I want you to check out. These are my final two pieces of news. The first one comes from Eddie's Guitars. Whenever I feel like there's not a lot going on in the acoustic guitar industry, I always turn to Eddie's Guitars and Heartbreaker Guitars because they stock some amazing instruments. In fact, the two instruments I'm going to share with you are from each of those shops, respectively. This first one comes from Eddie's Guitars, and it's from the folks at Bourgeois Guitars. They built a custom 00 DB signature that, I was going to say mind-blowing again, but I think I might have peaked out the mind-blowing references in today's Acoustic Tuesday show. It has me speechless. This guitar has a redwood top and figured mahogany back and sides, and it has some of the most beautiful high-end articulation that I have ever heard. It's crystalline, it's beautiful, it's shiny, it's bright, but it's bright with body. I'm gonna try and describe the guitar, but I'm not gonna do it any justice. Better off I just shut my yapper and you actually hear this thing. I thought it was super cool to feature that guitar because after we did the Tonewood episode, I got a lot of questions about redwood. How does it actually sound? Well, I think that is a shining example. And a little birdie told me that some years down the line, when I get my Tom Sands custom Model S with a redwood top, we'll be able to take a little bit closer look at how redwood actually sounds. Not that I'm, you know, waiting very eagerly for that moment. But anyways, let's move on to the next guitar. And this one really kind of straddles the fence between electric and acoustic. If you've seen Lindsey Buckingham play live, I would say in the last 10, 15, maybe even 20 years, he plays a Rick Turner Model 1. And this is a kind of almost a odd violin-shaped looking guitar that functions equally well as an electric as it does an acoustic. Now, Heartbreaker Guitars just got this special edition Model 1 in, and it's called the Featherweight. Now check this out. Usually the body of a Model 1 is made of mahogany, which is a fairly dense or heavier wood. Well, the Featherweight Model 1 is actually made with cedar as the core, meaning it's significantly lighter by about a pound and a half. Now, not only is there cedar in the core of this instrument, the back and the top, well, they're Brazilian rosewood, which is pretty amazing to look at. So with that being said, if you've never heard a Rick Turner Model 1, you gotta check it out. And Juan John over at Heartbreaker Guitars demos this guitar so incredibly well. Let's have a listen. ¶¶ such a cool guitar, am I right? And I actually have a story about a Rick Turner Model 1, because when I was in Heartbreaker Guitars, this was, oh my goodness, is it 3 years ago now? I guess it was 3 years ago. Yeah, 3 years ago, I was in Vegas with the family. Whitney, myself, her brother, her sister, her parents all went to Vegas on a family trip. It was super fun. It was kind of like National Lampoon's Vegas Vacation, but you know, not full of disasters. But we went to Heartbreaker Guitars, and I was checking out all the acoustic guitars up front. And my father-in-law, Mike, all of a sudden he disappeared. Gone. I was like, Heartbreaker Guitars is a big store, but it's not that big to where you can lose somebody. I can't find him. I can't find my father-in-law. But I hear what I think is electric guitar coming out of the other room. So I peek my head around the corner, and my father-in-law had been on stage playing a Rick Turner Model 1 for the entire time I was trying out guitars up front. I was out front for like an hour and a half. So he just kind of went into Rick Turner Model 1 land, and he just escaped. It was so cool, and that guitar left a major mark on him. So I can't imagine what this featherweight, I can't imagine how it feels to play and how it actually sounds in person. And of course, on that note, I think it's time to wrap up the Acoustic Tuesday show. You've heard enough of my personal stories today. Let me know in the comments below how you like the show. If you like insight into some of my acoustic debacles, let me know. I'll be sure to share more as I come up with them, as I remember them. But I want to thank you for joining me today. But before I close out the show, let's take a sneak peek into next week and see what I'll be chatting about. Next week on the Acoustic Tuesday show, it's all about practice preparation. Yes, preparing for your practice session and what you can do to get the most out of your practice session. You know, time is our most valuable resource, and sometimes we have these limited windows to practice. So I want to make sure you get the most out of that time. That will be the topic for next Acoustic Tuesday show. And remember, you can catch the Acoustic Tuesday show every single Tuesday at 10 a.m. here on YouTube. Again, thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you for being a devoted guitar geek. And I want to remind you of one thing. Your guitar success, your guitar progress, however you define it, is directly related to your guitar routine. So please invest the time in your guitar routine and make sure to have fun every single day that you play. Thanks again for joining me today. Cheers to you. Guitar Geeks Unite, and I'll see you next Tuesday on the Acoustic Tuesday Show. Take care.